Chapter 15. Achy Breaky Harp. I'm sitting on the stairs leading to the composing classroom when Miss Mott arrives. Jumping up, I meet her halfway down. "Hey, Miss Mott, I wondered if maybe we could have class outside today?" She blinks.
"It's sleeting."
"The library, then? I found a whole section of composers' biographies that..."
"Yesterday, we met in the cafeteria because you said you were hungry. The day before that, we met on the dock because you said fresh air might make you more inspired. While I wholeheartedly applaud learning en plein air, we haven't set foot in our classroom for a week, Amelia."
"Yes, well..." I struggle to think of a convincing excuse.
"I think I know what this is about."
She steps past me and opens the attic door.
"Coming?"
Deflated, I follow her up, my stomach twisting. This is the first time I've stepped into the attic classroom since my time spell went all wibbly-wobbly. The place is still a wreck. I guess the custodians don't come up here. Or maybe they were so offended by the terrific mess I made, they decided to leave it to me to clean up. I can't say I'd blame them. Desks are overturned. Pencils and papers are scattered everywhere, and bits of glass and broken ceramic crunch under my shoes. My eyes scan the mess, but stop just short of the bookshelf full of composition notebooks, the place where I'd seen him.
"My, my," says Miss Mott, looking around. "You really did a number on this place."
I sigh. "I'll go get a broom."
"Broom?" Tisk. "This is a composing class, isn't it?"
She gives me a light nudge with her elbow.
"Maybe it's time we actually do some composing and add a cleaning spell to your repertoire."
I look down at my flute case. I could try, I guess. Reluctantly, I assemble my flute and stand in the center of the room. Anything to avoid the looming bookshelf or the memory of who I saw there. He stood here. In this classroom, maybe in this very spot. The idea feels slimy. I wrench my mind away.
"Now slow down just a minute," says Miss Mott. "While I admire a can-do attitude, you can't grow flowers unless you've tilled the soil."
"Huh?"
"What I mean is, let's do this properly."
She sits on the teacher's desk, spreads her hands, and shuts her eyes. When I say nothing, she cracks one eye open and cocks her eyebrow.
"You gonna join me or stand there gawping like a fish on a platter?"
I shut my eyes.
"Good. Yes. Remember what we talked about? Emotion is the fuel your magic needs. So let's dig some up."
She takes a few deep breaths, then murmurs,
"You perch on a rocky cliff above a turquoise lagoon. Your heart flutters with anticipation. Then you leap into the unknown. Enter the water with hardly a splash. Dive deep, deep, deep."
I breathe in and out, searching for the calm places inside me. But I can feel a presence in the room, a shadow in the corner of my mind. No matter which way I turn my head, I can still sense it pressing on me. I can feel him.
"Breathe deep, Amelia. Now, plunge your hands into the muck and pull out the oysters of memory there. Yes, yes. What will we find today? Joy? Sorrow? Love? What will we spin into sound? What shape will your magic take?"
Cold sweat runs down the back of my neck. My dad's not here, obviously. That time window showed him years in the past. He's long gone, just like he's always been. So why does it feel like he's standing right behind me?
"Amelia, got your oyster yet?"
"Working on it," I mumble. Fighting to clear my head, I rummage for some memory to use, a happy one. The day I got my Mistwick acceptance letter? "Okay," I say tentatively.
"Good," says Miss Mott. "Now, crack that memory open and find the pearl of emotion inside. That's it. That's your fuel. Let it run through you. Feel it all over again, from your head to your toes. Let it whisper its melody in your ear. All great emotions have music hidden within them. All you have to do is listen. I try to remember everything about that day. The letter in Gran's hand, the glittering ink, the crinkle of the paper in my hands. It's still fresh and vivid in my mind, and I feel the joy and amazement I'd felt when I realized. Smooth and silky, notes slither through my thoughts. But it's no happy melody. It's back. That dark, angry music I heard in the shell just won't go away, no matter how hard I try to ignore it. It weaves through the memory I'd chosen, turning it sour. My joy withers, turning to dread. Those awful notes wind through me like a snake, tightening around that happy day and squeezing all of the light out of it. My eyes crack open to see Miss Mott watching me. Suppressing a shiver, I set my flute back in its case. I think I'll just go get that broom from the closet downstairs. I guess I'm feeling a little off today. "Mm-hmm," says Miss Mott, never taking her eyes off me. I take my time finding a broom, walking slow and pressing a hand to my chest, as if searching for the mute button that'll silence the music pounding in my skull. Prickly, hot anger burns on my skin like a rash. What's wrong with me? Why can't I compose? It's as if that time spell has broken me somehow. When I return a few minutes later, armed with everything I could carry from the custodial closet, I find Miss Mott still sitting on the desk. But she's got a yellow folder in her hands that I hadn't seen before. "Did you know your dad attended Mistwick?" she asks, as if she were commenting on the color of the walls and not opening the earth beneath my feet. The broom slips from my hands with a clatter. The dustpan, spray bottles, cloths, and sponges go next, as I frantically try to grab all of it but end up catching nothing. The stuff clatters on the floor, making a tremendous racket. "Yeah," I mutter when it's quiet again. "Of course I knew that." "I found his old student file," Miss Mott says, ignoring the cleaning supplies I just dumped all over the floor. She sets the file on my desk. "My sister says it's technically against policy to share it, but she agrees that in this case, the benefit might outweigh the red tape." Without looking at the folder, I pick up the broom and start sweeping broken pottery. I don't know why I need to look at that. "You don't have to look at it today," she says, her tone still mild. "Or tomorrow. You just wait till you're ready. Just remember, to be free of this anger, you must first understand it." Without answering her, I keep sweeping. I'm uselessly moving broken pieces around on the floor like an idiot, but I can't think straight enough to figure out what to do with them. The hair on my arms has gone all prickly. I just want her to say class is over so I can leave. Instead, Miss Mott reaches behind her desk and pulls up a pretty little Celtic harp. Smaller than the great concert harps I've seen some students playing, its frame is carved with beautiful whorls and knots and creatures. I let out a soft breath. It's the most beautiful instrument I've ever seen. The wood is so sleek and warm, as if it's breathing with life. "I was thinking," she says, "this is a composing class, right? Maybe it's time I learned a little something myself." Miss Mott lifts the harp and sits atop one of the empty desks, the instrument propped against her thigh. She closes her eyes, and for several long moments, she doesn't move or speak. I wait, my pulse racing. This is the first time I'll see her, or anyone, compose. Not daring to speak, I wait and sit very still. Finally, Miss Mott opens her eyes, lets out a little sigh, and places her hands on the strings. Another breath, and she begins to play. Miss Mott's fingers move delicately over the strings. Like bright birds, notes take to the air one by one, a steady trickle, then all at once in a tumbling flock. Her tempo quickens to a frenzy, fingers raining along the strings in a blur, then slows again to a gentle murmur. She moves with the music, leaning into and away from the harp, her eyes closed again.
her lips pressed together, her brow furrows, as if every note carries some special hidden meaning to her. I find myself watching her face more than her hands. Gradually, the strings of the harp begin to glisten with sunny yellow magic. "Did you know, Amelia?" she says softly over the music. "I was engaged once." I slide into a chair, my hands folded atop the desk, watching her with wide eyes. "He was a good man," she continues, her eyes still shut. Her strong fingers pull and dance over the strings, and her golden magic shines on the mahogany of her skin. "A man I loved." Magic flows away from her, curling through the air in the shapes of shimmering vines. It collects broken pieces, fallen chairs and books, and begins putting them back in their places. "The day of our wedding," she says, "I realized I couldn't make that commitment. I still had too much wander in me. He wouldn't deserve that. Me always gone, chasing every whim, him chasing after me. He called it my butterfly heart." A tear runs down her cheek, even though she's smiling. Riveted in place, I hardly dare breathe. All around me, her magic restores the room back to order, shelving books, stacking loose spell sheets. "I don't regret leaving, you know. I have to be honest about that. But I do regret not telling him I would. I left without a word, you see. Not even a note. I think he knew why I left, but still, I should have had the courage to say it aloud. But I didn't. And that's the one thing in my life I wish I could do over again. Simply facing the truth of my feelings." I lower my eyes a little, not wanting to see the tears on her face. Even though she's telling me this story, it still feels like something too private, especially for a teacher to say to a student. Teachers are supposed to be, I don't know, all rules and assignments and red pens. I don't think I've ever seen a teacher cry before. Awkwardly, I stare at my hands. "Guilt, Amelia," she says. "That's a powerful emotion. Putting that guilt into music doesn't erase the pain it causes me, but it does ease the burden. It helps me understand it better and to forgive myself a little more." I glance at the folder on my desk, but then my eyes slide away again. Finally, she finishes her spell. The harp's notes trickle sweetly into silence, and the magic fades from the air. The classroom is sparkling. Even the dust and cobwebs from the highest beams have been magicked away. Miss Mott smiles, looking pleased. "Well, that did the trick, didn't it?" "Aren't you going to write down your spell?" I ask, "before you forget it?" She runs her fingers over the carvings on her harp. "No, I don't think I will. We are composers, Amelia, but that doesn't mean everything we create has to be given away. Some music is just for us." That's all well and good, as Gran would say, but none of this is helping me with my real problem, composing a spell for the trials. Miss Mott, what happens when a composer can't compose? She nods slowly, thoughtful.
"You're talking about composer's block."
"It's a thing?"
"It's a thing, all right. Rachmaninoff had it for 4 whole years.
4 years, I moan. "What causes it?"
"Oh, could be anything. Maybe some folks say mean things about your music and it throws you into a funk, like what happened to poor old Rachmaninoff. Maybe you work too hard for too long and burn yourself out. Maybe you're too scared of messing up that you never start."
She turns up a hand.
"But it's no joke. Once you're funkified, it's not easy to get defunked."
Great. So here I am, in a funk, with 3 weeks left to compose a masterpiece, or I'll let down the entire school and prove Mia right, that I'm a one-hit wonder on a dead-end road. Worse than a has-been, a might-have-been. Too bad about that Amelia Jones. She showed a lot of promise. Might have been something special, if it weren't for that slump she got herself into. Guess we were wrong about her. Maybe she's not Mistwick material after all. Maybe she doesn't belong here. With a groan, I plant my face on the desk, only to realize that my dad's student file is still lying there. I jerk away as if stung, rising to my feet and reaching for my flute case. "Is that all for today, Miss Mott?" I ask stiffly. She studies me a moment longer, her expression unreadable. Then she says, "Yes, Amelia, that's all for today." I tuck my case under my arm and walk quickly to the door, leaving the yellow folder on the desk, untouched.